Okay, first of all, the strawberries have been ranked as a high risk with the potential of the nitrogen leaching to groundwater by the University of California and the Division of the Agricultural Natural Resources. They evaluated many crops and they concluded strawberries was a high risk. We didn't do that. They make the criteria and they made the assessment, and those the criteria is based on intrinsic characteristics of the crops. For example, one example would be the rooting depth. The shallow rooted crops like strawberries are considered higher risk for potential of leaching of nitrate than deep rooted crops. So basically the University of California Agricultural and Natural Resources Division says strawberries are high risk. The Strawberry Commission suggests they are low risk. And secondly, what we did, staff, we took a closer look at the study and the data they presented. And we actually don't think that the results they presented prove or can show that strawberries are low risk. And I'm going to go through a few reasons why. First of all, the study was based on a small subset of growers, about 10% for the whole region. We don't consider that to be a significant number. Then Santa Maria area is underrepresented on many levels, but mainly because none of the participating growers apply compost. So in other words, compost application was not evaluated as part of the results that were presented. And we think that that's a shortcoming. Also, the results presented were from half of the growing season, of the strawberry growing season. They presented data from what they call the production season, which was March on. So there is a window of time that is missing, that is when the crop is established. And we believe and it's expected that during that time, there could be significant amount of, or big, high amount of leaching of nitrate due to slow release fertilizer application and compost applications. So none of that was part of the evaluation. It will be evaluated as the project continues, but that data has not been presented yet. So basically, we disagree. We don't think that the results prove the strawberries are low risk. And actually, we don't think the data is insufficient, and mainly because it boils down that the point of the study was not to show the level of risk of a strawberry in the region. However, we think this is a great project, it's a great study, and it's going to actually provide extremely valuable information, especially on the amounts of nitrogen that the strawberries need to grow in the region. And a few presenters or people today make the comment that some of the crops have unknown amounts of nitrogen to grow. And so this project is going to provide that information for strawberries. Also, it shows that at least a subset of growers are already implementing efficient irrigation and nutrient management practices, and that they could minimize the nitrogen loading to groundwater even when they are growing high-risk crops. So we also wanted to bring this up, that the order provides, and we have included an incentive for those growers who, if in fact they are already meeting the targets that we proposed, they could apply to be considered as a low tier. So the growers would have to show documentation that actually shows that they are low threat to water quality. And in this case, an example would be like they will show record keeping of the total amount of nitrogen applied, and they have to calculate the targets they are already meeting, and if that actually is comparable to the targets we are proposing, 1.0, 1.2, they will be considered as a low to qualify as low tier. So as a conclusion, staff recommends that the nutrient management plan requirements and the list of the crops that are considered to be high risk for the potential of nitrogen leaching to groundwater to be adopted as it was written originally without any changes. I also would take the opportunity to respond to a few comments and questions that were raised by you before regarding the nitrogen ratios. Mr. Borrell and Mr. Costa were concerned that the ratios that we were proposing are based on how much is removed at harvest, the nitrogen amount removed at harvest. And they said that they don't think they can meet those ratios. We want to clarify to them that the ratios 1.0 and 1.2 is based on what the crop needs, or what they call the crop uptake. It's actually the total amount of nitrogen applied compared to what the crop needs or uptakes, not the amount of nitrogen that is removed at harvest. That's a big difference. I do understand why that confusion came along, because when we were preparing these requirements with the Technical Advisory Committee, we did discuss that as an alternative ratio and target. We actually decided to step down and actually start with the first step that will be a target based on what the crop needs. We don't think at this point could develop targets based on what is removed at harvest. Like Mr. Borrell said, we need more data, more technology to actually be able to develop targets for that. And we actually do agree with that, and we would probably, that would be next step. Another question that was raised that I guess it would be a good time to answer. We do know the nitrogen, typical nitrogen uptake by many crops, by crops in the region, in the Central Coast, for the crops called high-risk crops. There are about five crops that we actually, there is data that could be used as a target, and it's the value that will be considered as a typical nitrogen crop uptake. We do know those numbers for broccoli, and we have an idea on broccoli, cauliflower, celery, and there is significant amount of data on lettuce and now strawberries. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other staff comments? Yes.
We do have actually several other comments on some more recommended changes.
Okay.
Again, I'm Lisa McCann, MCCANN. I just wanted to wrap back around to a couple of the issues in response to the Farm Bureau proposal. Based on what we heard and what we spoke to you about on March, as well as in listening to some of the additional aspects of the proposal today. In general, the draft order does support industry use of coalitions and audits. It's condition 10 on page 12. We do support and encourage industry-led efforts to assist farmers to improve water quality and to work to comply with the order, and that we see this as a continuation of improvements that were initiated and have been in progress in a collaborative way and amongst industry per the existing order. In addition, we think industry should be helping farmers to specifically measure, account for, and report individual and specific effectiveness at controlling their individual discharges and reducing pollution loading. The proposal, even with the additional comments made today, still in staff's mind does not include adequate monitoring, reporting, time schedules, or milestones. The draft order does allow cooperative monitoring, as you know, similar to the current cooperative monitoring program for surface water monitoring, and also completely provides for the opportunity for growers to join together for cooperative groundwater monitoring as well, but staff still recommends that monitoring include individual drinking water wells and irrigation production wells at the various farms. That's two times that those wells would have to be sampled in the entire 5-year period of the order. And also wanted to mention that the opportunity for a trained professional to collect that data is also available in the way the MRP is currently written. That's the monitoring and reporting program. The issue that groundwater sampling is, I've seen some changes and heard some different ideas about groundwater sampling. It was originally proposed in the December proposal from the Farm Bureau, then it was not included in the March proposal, and then we heard today that it is in some capacity included in the proposal as currently presented. The proposal doesn't protect drinking water. The agriculture proposal does not explicitly protect drinking water. We have several requirements, including, for example, the requirement to have backflow prevention devices on the fertigation systems. Sorry. And if any chemicals are applied through the irrigation lines to prevent drinking water from being polluted. And the last comment is that the agricultural proposal, as proposed, still does not appear to be enforceable. And when I say still does not appear, meaning even with the changes that we heard about today briefly. And for example, there's no reporting on any individual discharge, on the conditions of any individual discharge, on what management practices would be implemented, on whether they are effective, whether loading is being reduced from any particular farm. And also, there are no requirements in their proposal to have to comply with water quality standards. Angela's now going to talk specifically about comments that we heard on changes to requirements in the order and staff's response to those.
Okay, so one of the things that we have heard consistently and again today was that the tiering criteria is not based on actual impacts to water quality. One of the challenges with the tiering criteria is that the only effective way to tier based upon impacts to water quality is to require an individual discharge characterization for the purposes of tiering. Staff actually evaluated that as an option back in November of 2010. And our conclusion at that time was it wasn't reasonable to ask every discharger to characterize their discharge for the purposes of putting them in a particular tier. So the challenge then is you have to select indicators or proxies or other items that are more reasonable to collect that would still help assess relative threat to water quality. So one of the specific comments that we have heard is that the order should not use acreage. This one is that the draft order tiering criteria should use characteristics of individual farms and not operations. Staff agrees and is recommending changes to the draft order to reflect this. So you might recall the slide that I showed in March of the three various individual farms that belong to an operation. So staff's recommending that we change the draft order to tier based upon the individual farms and not the operations. So this focuses the characteristics of an individual farm and is responsive to the concern that individual farms can get pulled into a tier just by their association of a particular operation. The board has also heard comments that the use of acreage in the tiering criteria is inappropriate. Staff evaluated threat to water quality, specifically relative nitrate loading risk based upon individual farm acreage, and still concludes that farm size is a meaningful tiering criteria for this purpose. The next few slides will provide details about staff's evaluation. So the purpose of this slide is to show you the range in farm size for those farms that grow crops identified by the University of California as having a high potential to load nitrate to groundwater. So of our total of 3,000 farms that have submitted and updated a notice of intent, there's about 1,372 farms that grow crop types with a high potential to load nitrate to groundwater. It's important to note that that represents approximately 189,000 acres, or more than 40% of the total irrigated acreage in our region. To be clear, again, this is not a graph of all the farms in the region. This is just the subset growing those crop types. On the x-axis here, we have farm acreage acreage categories. So, for example, here we have farms that are less than 10 acres, In the second bar, we have farms that are between 10 and 49 acres. And then at the far right end here, you have farms that are greater than 1,000 acres. On the y-axis, we have the number of farms within that acreage category. So you'll note that for this first one, for example, we have 91 farms that are less than 10 acres. In the second bar, we have 331 farms that are between 10 and 49 acres. And then here at the very far end, for example, we have 11 farms that are greater than 1,000 acres. So what I'm going to point out to you here is that the average farm size for those farms, the high potential to low nitrate groundwater, is about 50 acres. So if you just do a statistical analysis of the data, what's interesting is that...
Slow down just a bit.
Okay. What's interesting about that 50 acres is that is also the average farm size just overall. So that's consistent here. So keep that number in mind because it's going to play into how we evaluated the relative risk to groundwater. So remember I showed you this slide on March 17th, and this is a slide that was used as part of a training for irrigation nutrient management by the University of California Cooperative Extension. It represents data from more than 100 lettuce fields, and it shows the seasonal nitrogen application. Before I sort of get into the slide, I should point out this is another example. This is another example of where we have data on crop uptake value for nitrogen. So here, remember, we have seasonal nitrogen application for lettuce. The high is 392, the low is 70, and the average is about 215. So we have data for lettuce that the average crop uptake for nitrogen is 140 pounds per acre. So if you take this average pounds per acre for the spring planting season, you subtract it, or you subtract the crop uptake, you get excess nitrogen on average of about 75 pounds per acre. And this is not to say that all lettuce growers apply excess nitrogen. I'm just using the example here of what's been presented by the Cooperative Extension as the average seasonal nitrogen application. So again, let's remember that the sort of average excess nitrogen for lettuce is about 75 pounds per acre. So this is an evaluation that staff did to look at relative nitrate loading. If we compare farms using acreage, we can evaluate that relative loading, starting with the average farm size of 50 acres. So at 50 acres with at 75 pounds per acre of potential excess nitrogen, you get about 3750 pounds of nitrogen that is excess on a farm size of about 50 acres. So that that's the excess nitrogen for that particular farm size, which is the average farm size. If you then look at a 100-acre farm, you'll notice, and take the 75 pounds per acre, you get 7,500 pounds of excess nitrogen. So in comparison to the average farm size of 50, we have about twice as much nitrate loading potential as that smaller farm. And you can continue to go on down the list. So at 500 acres, you get 37,500 pounds of nitrogen excess potentially, which is now at about 10 times relative nitrate loading. So you can sort of run this analysis to do a relative nitrate loading risk. And it's not to say that all farms are loading this amount of nitrogen. My example here is to show that there is some relative risk through farm size if you take these average values. And the actual, the actual amount of nitrogen applied is going to vary by crop. So this is just an example of how we evaluated that data. And this is just meant to show that even smaller farm size, you can get a fraction of what you'd get if you had a 50-acre farm. So staff evaluated sort of the relative nitrate loading and tried to create some scenarios for how we could assess relativeness about it. And what we started looking at was just orders of magnitude. So if you're between 50 and 500 acres, you're within an order of magnitude of the average. Once you're larger than 500 acres, you start getting an order of magnitude higher in terms of potential nitrate loading. So staff's recommendation is that for this particular criteria, that we use this breakdown for the tiering criteria. So that would be less than 50 acres for tier one, between 50 and 500 for tier two, and then greater than 500 for tier three. And what I wanted to point out here is that that results in, now we're looking, remember that we're looking at individual farms and not operations. So that would result in about 69 individual farms or 56,000 acres in tier three for this criteria. And the majority of farms would be, or acres would be into tier two, and then a lesser amount would be into tier one. So this is how the recommended change would look in the tier three criteria. So instead of saying operations greater than 1,000 acres, it would say farms greater or equal to 500 acres and growing crop types with potential to load nitrate to groundwater. So the next change that we would like to recommend is in response to the comment that the draft order shouldn't allow the use of the nitrate hazard index, including soil type. Staff agrees and recommends changes to the draft order to allow the use of the nitrate hazard index tool. A little bit of background on that is that we considered using that originally, but opted not to use the soil aspect of the nitrate hazard index because we thought it would be too burdensome to growers to have to evaluate the soil type from their farms, especially given the variability of soil type in the Central Coast region. I have since March 17th talked to Dr. Letty, who came and spoke to us on March 17th with the Farm Bureau team, and he assured me that farmers could evaluate soil type easily and that the nitrate hazard index tool that's available to them can accommodate the soil types on the Central Coast. The board also heard comments that the tiering criteria should include additional pesticides rather than just chlorpyrifos and diazinon. The concerns related to this comment are that the toxicity in our agricultural areas is due to more than just chlorpyrifos and diazinon, that lots of pesticides cause toxicity, not just those two, and that by focusing on these two chemicals, you could encourage some growers to switch. Staff evaluated the possibility of including additional pesticides in the tiering criteria and concludes that changes are not warranted at this time and that the related requirements in the draft order are protective of water quality and address the concerns I just mentioned. Specifically, the draft order includes toxicity monitoring of surface receiving water. Monitoring for toxicity, just like it is currently, will generally capture the impacts caused by multiple individual pesticides. In addition, the draft order MRP also adds individual pesticide monitoring, different from the existing CM cooperative monitoring program, of approximately 50 of the most common agricultural pesticides in surface receiving water. This is new in the draft order, again, different from the existing cooperative monitoring program, and that this will provide the data to identify the detection of and any change in occurrence in receiving water related to the specific individual pesticides. In addition, the draft order also requires toxicity identification evaluation studies, or TIEs, to be conducted when there's persistent unresolved toxicity. This is another improved aspect in the draft order MRP, which is different from the existing program. Then finally, in terms of the Tier 3 individual discharge monitoring, the requirements include both toxicity and chlorpyrifos and diazinon. The Tier 3 MRP also provides the EO with the authority to add additional pesticides to the individual monitoring based upon pesticide use. So if a grower was to switch from, say, chlorpyrifos to malathion, for example, and there was still persistent toxicity, the EO could change, could adapt the monitoring and reporting program for that grower. It is also important to point out that the draft order includes an explicit finding which would allow the board to modify the pesticide tiering criteria if appropriate. This is the beginning, it's not the end. The draft order provides the opportunity for staff to recommend and for the board to consider additional pesticides in the future. Finally, a less significant issue, but important nonetheless, is that there would be consequences to adding new pesticides to the tiering criteria at this time. Staff was attempting to be reasonable in the tiering approach by starting with specific chemicals and not a wide variety or amount of them. These specific chemicals that we included are the known sources of severe toxicity on the Central Coast. Including additional pesticides would elevate an unknown number of growers to the higher tiers, tier three potentially. And that this would and staff would need additional time to evaluate the impact of these changes. This would result in an unnecessary delay of order adoption and ultimately a delay in implementation and water quality improvement. So staff's conclusion is that it's not necessary at this time to add additional pesticides to tiering criteria, and that the draft order and MRP are an improvement on the existing order and protective of water quality.
Angela, what about pyrethroids? We heard testimony that they are in use and they are being picked up in receiving waters.
And the draft order includes adding those individual pesticides to the MRP. It also, if a grower was to use that pesticide, individual grower in Tier 3, the EO could adapt their monitoring requirements to include those chemicals.
Well, what would be the significance of adding that now?
It's
just one additional chemical.
It's pyrethroids is actually a group of chemicals. So it's not just one chemical. So potentially what we'd have to do is to go through the DPR use database, just like we did for chlorpyrifos and diazinon, and evaluate where that's in use and how that would affect the tiering criteria.
So staff doesn't have the data on how many farms are using pyrethroids in the Central Coast region?
It's a little bit complex, and that's because we don't have, at the regional board, the data for each individual farm. What we have to do is look at the pesticide use data as reported by the permits.
And by
so
who?
By the permits,
by the
DPR permits. And so we have to merge that data and figure out who is using it based upon that analysis. However, our preliminary analysis shows that it would be a significant increase likely.
Just pyrethroids.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So finally, an easy an additional change that we're recommending based upon the comment that the board should have exclusive authority to modify the tiering criteria, not the executive officer. Staff agrees and is recommending changes to the draft order to reflect that, and we agree that making this change provides more stability and certainty in the tiering criteria so that growers can plan and implement based upon sort of a more predictive tiering criteria.
Dr. Hunter.
On pyrethroids, the way the monitoring program is structured now for receiving water monitoring, will we see or pick up any problems associated with pyrethroids? Is that data going to somehow get defined and get?
I believe yes, but I'll defer that question to Karen.
Karen Worcester, WORCESTER. In the second year of the program, the receiving water monitoring program has enhanced components that include pesticide monitoring along with the toxicity monitoring. So when they do, for example, the sediment toxicity monitoring, they will also do monitoring of pyrethroids that attach to sediments.
Okay.
So there's a whole suite of pyrethroids, maybe a 10 or 12 that are required to be monitored at that time.
And that's Tier 3 only?
No, this is the receiving water monitoring program, the cooperative monitoring program.
Oh, okay.
Now, the individual monitoring for Tier 3, mm-hmm. what we're discussing now, staff is recommending not adding additional pesticides, but what we did do is we changed the required toxicity monitoring. It originally included two tests in water, one that is for an invertebrate and one for an algae.
Mm-hmm.
The invertebrate, Ceridaphnia, is more sensitive to OP pesticides. So we substituted the algae test for another type of invertebrate test that's sensitive to pyrethroids.
Pyrethroids, okay. Yeah. Okay. So over the 5 years, we'll start to see some characterization of where pyrethroids are a problem.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay, thank you.
I just wanted to clarify and make sure something Karen said was clear. We're not recommending adding pyrethroids as a tiering criteria, but if an individual discharger in Tier 3 is using a pyrethroid, the executive officer could require them to monitor for that specifically in their individual discharge.
And that could develop from the receiving water data?
It could develop from the receiving water data. It could also develop directly from their pesticide use through our knowledge from the Department of Pesticide Regulation pesticide use information that is linked to the individual farms.
And would it also come through in the annual compliance report? Are they required to report what pesticides
they're
using?
Yes, yeah. They are.
So this is a summary of the recommended changes to the draft order, tiering individual farms instead of operations, modifying the tiering criteria to look at acreage relative to nitrate loading, allow the use of the UC Nitrate Hazard Index, removing the executive officer authority to modify the tiering criteria, and finally, just sort of a more administrative, we would need to adjust the dates in the order and MRP to reflect board adoption, because those dates are getting old at this point. So we feel like these changes will improve the draft order, focusing efforts on the characteristics of individual farms and prioritizing discharges that pose the highest threat to water quality. So, however, these changes do result in some change to the numbers of farmers and tiers. Most substantively, the change from operation to farm and in the acreage. So we went down from an operation of 1,000 acres for Tier 3 to a farm of 500 acres or more. So this is sort of a summary of how overall the numbers of growers and acreages would fill the tiers. Again, this is just an estimate, and it's based upon the data that we have received from our updated notice of intent. So for Tier 3, we estimate approximately 100 farms, individual farms, and this would represent about 20% of the acreage. So this is a pretty significant reduction from the November draft. If you remember, I think we were at about 230,000 acres before. However, what we do think is that at this reduced acreage, the requirements for Tier 3 will be more focused on those that would be implementing the necessary requirements. So, for example, before it was a subset that would have to implement the irrigation nutrient management plan. So we feel like we've captured the subsets more here versus the entire operation. However, it's still consistent that for Tier 2, which is those requirements that are most similar to the existing order, we still have a majority of our farms and a majority of the acreage in that Tier 2 with a smaller amount of farms, 630% of the acreage, representing what we would identify as very low threat. So again, our recommendation is those changes. We feel that the tiering approach is reasonable and responsible given the severity of the water quality conditions. We feel that the requirements for Tier 3 are reasonable given the severity, magnitude, and potential threat to water quality, and that a majority of the farmers would have similar requirements as they currently do.
Got a couple of questions for you. Let's say we have a small watershed that just has Tier 2 farms in it, and there's going to be no individual monitoring for surface water, correct?
That's correct.
Is there going to be individual groundwater monitoring for Tier 2?
That's correct. So,
well, there is?
There is,
okay.
Yes.
For surface water, what if you don't see an improvement in surface receiving waters over a 2-3-4 year period, and all that we have is these collective monitoring stations out there in the watersheds, what's the next step? I mean, there's no mechanism in this permit for trying to further delineate who might be contributing to a problem.
Well, there are some mechanisms, but let me first describe that we would conduct implementation of the order similar to what we do now. So we wouldn't just be looking at the receiving water bead data. We'd be looking at what the Tier 2 growers were reporting as part of their annual compliance reports in terms of the practices they are implementing, if necessary, the total nitrogen applied if they were a higher risk in terms of nitrate loading. So we would be able to sort of discern within that data the potential threat to water quality. The annual compliance report also asks for characteristics of the discharge. And so we would be looking at, for example, volumes of tailwater, things like that. If receiving water didn't improve, there are some options. One is we could adapt the MRP, for example, to get more explicit information about that. We could also look at, based upon the information that we do have, potentially elevating some growers, if necessary, to a higher reporting level in Tier 3.
Based on what? I mean, and the board would have to do that, I assume. Or are you saying that the EO could elevate people? From
the current draft order gives the executive officer the authority to elevate a grower to a higher tier.
And vice versa.
And vice versa. So when they, a discharger could provide information that they belong in a lower tier, and we could also consider that.
What we're recommending as far as maintaining the board authority is on the tiering criteria itself.
You know, going back, Angela, to your slide with the breakdown of the high nitrate use crops, the nitrogen risk hazard. Could you go? Yeah. You know, when I look at that, I come up with a similar reaction as I had when I looked at the slides based on the aggregate coming up to 1,000 acres, but in a little different way. I just want to throw this out there and get you to react to it. The the real issue here is just the fact of the amount of per acre potential excess fertilization. That's really the standard that you're using through all of this. And you could have 10 farms side by side on one side of a river,
mm-hmm.
all in Tier 2. And on the other side is the same amount of acreage combined as one farm is 1,000 acres, and you'd have two different tiers. But the risk to water quality would be the same.
So you're talking about sort of the more the collective impact of
yes.
those discharges. That's
right.
True. And we looked at, you know, if you look at, for example, we grouped the acreage. So we, in terms of these categories, these bars, we know how much acreage is within these categories. And it's not insignificant. So a large number of smaller acre ranches do contribute to nitrate loading. And in fact, it was a difficult evaluation for staff in terms of trying to assign tiers using this data, because if you look at even the 10-acre farm or the 50-acre farm, 750 pounds of excess nitrogen for a single cropping season that may occur multiple times over the year is not insignificant alone. And so how do you justify putting that particular farm in a lower tier? But again, we recognize that we're trying to prioritize and start somewhere, and so we made a judgment call, essentially, you know, evaluated the various options, one of which was everybody goes to Tier 3 and or you know, drawing these different lines. So what we one of the reasons why staff is comfortable with this recommendation is because each of the tiers includes a level of nutrient management requirements. At Tier 3, you have an increased irrigation nutrient management plan. At Tier 2, you have the basic farm plan, plus a total nitrogen applied reporting for a subset of those. And then for Tier 1, you have the farm plan without reporting. So we thought that that was a reasonable and sort of scaled requirement.
Okay. All right. Go ahead.
We're over to Michael.
Michael.
Just a couple of things. Excellent. That I wanted to reiterate, but not spend very much time on. One of them is that something we've presented to the board over and over again, and it's established in our staff report and in the order. That's that the water quality problems in our region are severe. Both the groundwater and surface water problems are severe. The water quality conditions report that we submitted to the board relies heavily on literature and empirical data. It is probably one of the most referenced reports that we have ever written. And we have a slide that we could show you if you're interested that summarizes the number of references and the timeline for those references. These problems that exist in our region are well known throughout the state and throughout the country. And it's the studies that have been done on these problems have been done by a multitude of people and a multitude of organizations. And the studies all indicate the same thing. It's not like we have a little bit of data that indicates we may have a problem or that we have competing bodies of literature. The overwhelming majority of the literature describes severe water quality problems in our irrigated agriculture areas. This order addresses those water quality problems. When we started this process 2.5 years ago, the board made it clear and the executive officer made it clear that we had to draft an order that addressed the water quality problems. Our legal counsel also made that clear to us. Otherwise, the order isn't valid. We have to address those problems. We have to address them directly, and we have to achieve water quality standards over time. We also need an order that is enforceable with respect to those water quality standards. Otherwise, it's not a valid order. The tiering approach, we think, is reasonable. And no matter what tiering approach we come up with, we can criticize it. We have to start someplace. It's important to remember that in starting someplace, we are undoubtedly going to revise that criteria over time. The more we learn, the more information that is submitted to the board, the more the board learns about the problems, the more likely it is that we will modify and improve that criteria. And the way this order is set up, the board has the authority to change that criteria, not the executive officer. So we will be bringing that issue back to the board. So this isn't the end result, and it's not intended to be the end result or to be perfect. It's a starting point, and we'll modify it as we go. The order is flexible. It allows growers to implement various management practices, to use their own skills, their own expertise, to work with the professionals that are out there, to apply unique approaches on their own properties, but to achieve water quality standards. That is the purpose of this agency, to achieve those water quality standards, to require achieving those standards over a reasonable amount of time. And growers have the flexibility to implement different practices to do that. This order allows that. And finally, there have been many changes in response to comments. We hear both sides, or all sides of this issue. We hear that staff is completely unresponsive on one end of the scale. On the other end of the scale, we hear that staff is bending over backwards to accommodate the ag industry, that we have changed our draft over the past year and a half, our drafts, multiple drafts, to the point where they no longer have any meaning. We have changed the draft significantly over a year and a half. And Angela and Lisa just went over additional changes that we're making today or proposing today in response to comments again. So I think the record shows that we have been responsive. With that, I'll turn it over to Roger.
Thanks, Michael. Some of these things will be a bit of a reiteration, but I get the last shot here as far as staff goes, so bear with me. The toxicity in the surface waters and the... Need a break? That's kind of anticlimactic.
How much of a break would you like?
Well, Roger only has, I think, a couple of minutes.
Well, but then the board has a lot to discuss.
Right, after.
Discuss.
I'm saying you could break after.
That's okay, we'll take a break.
We'll take a break. Is 15 minutes, is that good for you? Okay.